Welcome to Mysterious Topics, a podcast focusing on intriguing topics deserving further scrutiny. Each episode, the hosts examine a topic, add their opinions, and hopefully pique your interest as well. Visit MysteriousTopics.com for contact information and more. Now, here are your hosts, Chuck and John.
Hi, John.
Hi, Chuck, and hi to everyone else. We are going to be discussing the Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 that disappeared last spring. And we just have some new information that we haven't heard before that we'd like to discuss today.
On March 8th, 2014, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 took off from Kuala Lumpur International Airport in Malaysia, heading for Beijing Capital International Airport in what was supposed to be a flight of slightly less than 6 hours. But it never arrived. It disappeared. Extensive news coverage of the disappearance followed in the days and months after the vanishing. Also, extensive searching for the aircraft has been conducted, and nothing, not even floating debris, has been found. Our discussion today will include some rather strong opinions of a senior airline executive.
The aircraft remained operational for at least 7 hours after the loss of contact, since a satellite terminal continued to transmit messages during this period. These satellite handshakes were hourly connections with the plane that were possible when an Inmarsat satellite was able to connect automatically with a portion of the plane's messaging system that remained in operation. Aviation experts have had little to go on besides the satellite communications from the plane, which they have used to pinpoint a search in the huge Indian Ocean far off the west coast of Australia.
After the Southern Hemisphere winter, which just ended, the search of the seafloor has recently resumed. But Tim Clark, CEO of Emirates Airlines, one of the most successful and fastest growing airlines, feels Flight 370 may not be in the Indian Ocean, and he suggests that the search may be focused on the wrong area. The Malaysia government originally refused to release the cargo manifest for public record, but eventually released it on May 1st, about 7 weeks after the flight. Only 9 days after the flight, Malaysia Airlines said the flight carried no dangerous cargo, but the released manifest listed lithium-ion batteries, which are known culprits for fires on planes and elsewhere, including 3 Tesla autos.
The following is a recreation of an interview conducted by Spiegel Online International with Sir Tim Clark. Tim Clark has been a senior manager at the airline Emirates since 1985 and has been instrumental in developing it into one of the world's largest airlines. Today, the 64-year-old is seen as a knowledgeable expert and critic of the aviation industry. His view of the vanished Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 is a provocative one. The plane that disappeared was a Boeing 777, and Emirates operates 127 such aircraft, more than any other airline in the world. Now the interview.
Okay, Sir Clark. It's now October, 7 months after the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines flight MH370, and we still don't know what happened. What can still be done to gain some degree of clarity?
MH370 remains one of the great aviation mysteries. Personally, I have the concern that we will treat it as such and move on. At the most, it might then make an appearance on National Geographic as one of aviation's great mysteries. We mustn't allow this to happen. We must know what caused that airplane to disappear.
And what do you think happened?
My own view is that probably control was taken of that airplane.
By whom? What do you think happened?
It's anybody's guess who did what. We need to know who was on the plane in the detail that obviously some people do know. We need to know what was in the hold of the aircraft. And we need to continue to press all those who were involved in the analysis of what happened for more information. I do not subscribe to the view that the Boeing 777, which is one of the most advanced in the world and has the most advanced communication platforms, needs to be improved with the introduction of some kind of additional tracking system. MH370 should never have been allowed to enter a non-trackable situation.
Well, what do you mean by that?
The transponders are under the control of the flight deck. These are tracking devices, aircraft identifiers that work in the secondary radar regimen. If you turn off that transponder in a secondary radar regimen, that particular airplane disappears from the radar screen. That should never be allowed to happen. Irrespective of when the pilot decides to disable the transponder, the aircraft should be able to be tracked.
Well, what about other monitoring methods?
The other means of constantly monitoring the progress of an aircraft is ACARS. It is designed primarily for companies to monitor what its planes are doing. We use it to monitor aircraft systems and engine performance. At Emirates, we track every single aircraft from the ground, every component and engine of the aircraft at any point on the planet. Very often, we are able to track systemic faults before the pilots do.
How might it have been possible to disable that tracking system?
Disabling it is no simple thing, and our pilots are not trained to do so, but on flight MH370, this thing was somehow disabled to the degree that the ground tracking capability was eliminated. We must find systems to allow ACARS to continue uninterrupted, irrespective of who is controlling the aircraft. If you have that, with the satellite constellations that we have today, even in remote ocean regions, we still have monitoring capability, so you don't have to introduce additional tracking system.
Well, what then are you proposing?
My recommendation to aircraft manufacturers that they find a way to make it impossible to disable ACARS from the flight deck and the transponder as well. I'm still struggling to come up with a reason why a pilot should be able to put the transponder into standby or to switch it off. MH370 was, in my opinion, under control probably until the very end.
If that is the case, then why would the pilot spend 5 hours heading straight towards Antarctica?
If they did, I am saying that all the facts of this particular incident must be challenged and examined with full transparency. We are nowhere near that. There is plenty of information out there which we need to be far more forthright, transparent, and candid about. Every single second of that flight needs to be examined up until it theoretically ended up in the Indian Ocean, for which they still haven't found a trace, not even a seat cushion.
Does that surprise you? The possible crash area west of Australia is vast, and the search there only began following considerable delays.
Our experience tells us that in water incidents where the aircraft has gone down, there is always something. We have not seen a single thing that suggests categorically that this aircraft is where they say it is, apart from this so-called electronic satellite handshake, which I question as well.
At what point on the presumed flight path of MH370 do your doubts begin?
There hasn't been one overwater incident in the history of civil aviation, apart from Amelia Earhart in 1939, that has not been at least 5 or 10% trackable. But MH370 has simply disappeared. For me, that raises a degree of suspicion. I'm totally dissatisfied with what has been coming out of all of this.
What can be done to improve the investigation's transparency?
I'm not in a position to do it. I'm essentially an airline manager, but I will continue to ask questions and make a nuisance of myself, even as others would like to bury it. We have an obligation to the passengers and crew of MH370 and to their families. We have an obligation to not sweep this under the carpet, but to sort it out and do better than we have done.
Malaysia Airlines has experienced two tragic catastrophes this year, the disappearance of MH370 and the apparent shooting down of MH17 over eastern Ukraine in July. If you led the company, what would you do?
Very difficult one. None of us has been in such a situation before, having to deal with two tragedies within a few months of each other. It will be very difficult for Malaysia Airlines to deal with this stigma. They need to take a fresh look at what they do, revisit their business model, possibly consider a rebranding. We as an industry need to find a way to help these guys sort out their problems, but with that kind of brand damage, it's extraordinarily difficult.
Well, that ends the interview.
So, Chuck, how do you feel about the information that Tim Clark has revealed in that interview?
Well, he makes a very good point in that nothing has been found, not even a seat cushion. And out of all the flights that have disappeared in history, except for Amelia Earhart's, something has always been found. And thus far, nothing has been found. And I know the area in the Indian Ocean is vast, and I think things can get easily lost out there. But I think some answers need to be forthcoming. We really can't just assume it's in the bottom of the ocean, I don't think.
This happened in the spring, and there was, of course, a lot of news on it right away for a couple of months, and then all of a sudden it just sort of vanished. And I know because it's winter on the southern hemisphere, that supposedly hampered their search on that, but it's just a little perplexing to me that we haven't had any kind of information on this until this article, this interview with Tim Clark. And it's the same thing. He's saying the same thing that I felt, that it's very unusual that so he's saying that they had all of these batteries on board, which seemed to have caused fires before. But if there was a simple fire, somebody would have made contact with radio, I would think, through the radio. The fact that they didn't do anything like that, and the plane was flying for that long afterwards, it's just so very suspicious and mysterious that it's inexplicable how something like this could happen.
Well, I know when this first happened, CNN, I believe, did almost nonstop coverage of the event for days and even weeks, maybe. It was really incredible how much time they spent on it. And there are these conspiracy theories. I know there were apparently 20 employees of Texas Instruments from Austin, Texas, on board that plane. 12 of them, I believe, were from Malaysia and 8 were from China. But 4 of those people had patents and on a particular procedure or technological something or other. And there was one other of the patent holders that survived. And apparently the rest of the whole patent went to the surviving person. So it's a little suspicious that these 4 would die. But what bothers me more than anything is the way the plane disappeared. You know, if it's going to go down, just, okay, put a bomb in it or something, or do something that they can do to disable the plane. But just to have it go off course for hours and hours is really puzzling.
It reminds me of the TV show Lost. you just wonder when fiction meets reality, if they did take that plane somewhere and land it, if somebody did that. I don't know if that could be possible.
You almost hope it would be possible, don't you? Just to have something like that happen, and to have the plane found someday on an island or someplace, I think would be very intriguing. Which certainly make a good movie. Well, yeah. It already did make a
What, this one did?
Well, Lost was not a movie, but it was, okay. This incident didn't make it, but there already has been something made similar to this in Lost.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's a better ending than Lost.
Well, that was depressing. Yeah. Didn't give you any resolution. That was what bothered me about it. You want some kind of resolution.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's not much else to say until we come up with any more new information. Like Tim Clark was saying, somebody knows the details of the what was on that plane, who was on that plane that we don't know about yet. And hopefully this sort of people speaking out of this sort of expertise will make them reveal more of this information.
I hope so. I'm reminded of one of our previous podcasts where we were talking about the Great Lakes and how that Northwest Airlines flight went down over Lake Michigan and they weren't able to find the remains of the aircraft. But in that situation, they did find debris, whether it was life rafts or seat cushions or something. But my point is that even in Lake Michigan, which is a much more confined area, obviously, than the vast Indian Ocean, it was difficult to actually locate something. So perhaps all these mysteries surrounding it are really not valid, and it really did go down. But the question is why it went off course to begin with. That's the main question.
The whole thing is just very suspicious. The whole, the first couple days about how they thought it was one place, and then the next day all of a sudden it was going out over towards, I believe, India, and then all of a sudden it was headed directly south finally. And I just don't understand how they could completely lose an airline like that.
Well, I know if it would have happened over our country or over our airspace, as soon as they went missing, there would have been fighter jets up there scrambling just to see what's going on, to see where it might have gone. And perhaps they didn't have that kind of airplane power in that area of this flight that they could do that easily. But you would think China would be able to do that with their airfare that they have.
Well, I think that when any flight is flying, they have to check in along the way so it gets handed off. So it's never out of reach of a radar, I believe, correct? So I don't know how long it takes when one loses control. You'd think they'd confirm with the next stop, do you have it, right away? And then they would know. I mean, did they know right from the beginning that there was a problem? I don't remember now.
Yeah, because I don't know either. I don't know either. But even this is probably a busy place, this Malaysia Airlines. I mean, it took off from a busy airport and it was heading towards a busy airport. So I'm sure there were many other flights in the area, I would think. And you would think that some of these other planes would see this plane that is going off course. It's going in a different direction than what one would think. Maybe I'm being too naive here, or I am too naive about the operations of the airplanes and the air traffic controllers, but it just, there's a lot of questions that aren't answered, I believe.
And the other scary thing about when a plane would be taken off and disappear from the radar, that means the first thought I would have is that, you know, we're going to have a mid-air collision because nobody else knows we're out here now. They don't know where we are.
Right.
And we don't know where they are. Yes. I don't know if, you know, so that would be the scariest thing. If you knew what was going on and you were in that plane and suddenly you disappeared from radar, that would be frightening.
Absolutely. Especially this disappearance took place not that long after the takeoff. And once they got off over the Indian Ocean, if that's where they actually ended up, perhaps the traffic is much lighter out there and that your concern wouldn't be so great. But I think when they first took off in the wrong direction, I think that would have been a big concern.
Yes, well, it's definitely a mystery. And for a big plane like that, it's like you say, if it went down in the water, like Tim Clark was saying, that they couldn't even find a cushion. And you would think that they'd find something floating at some point if it went down there.
I agree.
And I realize under the ocean, I don't know if people realize how vast it is. It's covers 2/3 of the planet, so there's basically twice as much area under the water as there is above the water. And there are mountain ranges and all that down under the water, too. So
I know there is sophisticated equipment available today, but I can imagine a plane being down there and never being found. I really can.
At this point, because the transponder only was supposed to work up to a month, so now they're totally hunting blind in a huge haystack.
Well, anyway, I like the idea that this CEO from the airline is questioning it. I think that's important that we just don't let it go. And I think he was emphasizing that, too. He just doesn't want to let it go and see it on National Geographic someday as the mystery that was never solved. I think it's important that people like him, knowledgeable people like him, keep looking, keep talking about it, keep asking questions. And I'm glad that Sir Tim Clark is doing this now, and I hope it leads to more investigations, you know, not just in the search, but in theories as to what might have happened, and maybe expand the search kind of like out of the box and look in a different direction. At least some of the searchers looking in a different direction. I'm not saying give up the search, the physical search in the Indian Ocean, but I think also just change direction for some searchers and say, where else could this be? I hope they do find it on land someplace. That would be my hope. And they'd all be alive. And I don't know how happy they'd be because they wouldn't be with their families, obviously. But it would, because if they were with their families, then everything would be hunky dory. But obviously they haven't contacted their families and they're not with their families. So that puts an ominous note over the whole situation, even if they are found someday.
Yeah, it would be terrific to eventually find even a few of the survivors somehow, if that's possible at this point. But I agree that it's important, and that's why we wanted to do this podcast and to read this interview and hopefully make more people aware that somebody important out there is feeling like a lot of us feel about this situation.
Well, John, I think we've talked about this situation pretty thoroughly here and brought up some new ideas, and hopefully we'll get some answers down the road. So thanks to our listeners for listening to our podcast, and please check us out at mysterioustopics.com. And this is Chuck saying goodbye.
And John, goodbye.
Thank you.